Well, Dave, I never go by that. When I went to my first home group, there were 5 Daves in my home group. So there was short Dave and tall Dave and fat Dave and skinny Dave. And I became blind Dave. I didn't become blind to be blind Dave. I mean, but anyway, so I am blind Dave, y'all, and I'm an alcoholic. Cool. Very good. And, you know, one of our elder statesmen that we all love, I was listening to him speak one time and on the steps, and he said, everybody does the steps a little different. He says, I've never seen a way that worked for everybody, nor have I ever seen a way that didn't work for some. So what I'm going to be sharing with you today is Blind Dave's opinion, my view on the steps, you might say, as Blind Dave sees it. So I've never thought of easy does it. I've never applied that statement to how I should work my program, and I hope you don't either. The big book says this, each of us is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, and we're forever trying to arrange, and we're driven by 100 forms of fear. And at some point we begin to think life doesn't treat us right, and we decide to exert ourselves more. But then the big book also says this, in thinking about our day, we may face indecision. Here we ask God for inspiration and intuitive thought or decision, and we relax and take it easy and don't struggle. We're often surprised how right answers come after we have tried this. So that sounds pretty nice, but there's some things I had to do before that experience became available to me. You know, and then right after that it says, pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. But there's some things I had to do before that applied to me. Now, when we read, he begins to think life doesn't treat him right, he decides to exert himself more, well, pause goes in between those two. So, but there's some things I have to do before I can rely upon that working. So what did I have to do? Well, first of all, I had to make a decision to turn my will and life over to the care of God as I understood him. And first of all, it said I had to learn how to quit playing God. And next, in the drama of life, I've got to learn how to let God become my director. In fact, it says that is the how and why of our program. For me to quit playing God and learn how to let God become my director. It says, when I sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. Yay! It says, we have a new employer, being all powerful. He provided what we needed. Wonderful. But it says, he is all powerful and would provide what we needed if, and if you've never circled that word, you better, because everything depends upon this if. God is all powerful and will provide what you need if you will keep close to him and perform his work well, and nothing else. It does not mention anything else. God will do this when I do this. When I do this, God does this. When I need this done, I do this, and then God does this. And I need to make sure I keep straight on that. In fact, it says established on such a footing. It is very hard when I'm working with sponsees to get them established on the fact that when you do this, God does this. And when you need God to do this, you do this. And the ball is in your court. So my job is to get people established on that simple principle. This and this, and don't get them blurred. And remember, there is nothing else mentioned. So that means that all of the rest of the steps in some way or the other, since that is step 3, then what are all these other steps for? Well, somehow or the other, they must pertain to either keeping close to him or performing his work well, because there was nothing else. And that comes down to meaning inventory and service. So all of the rest of the steps, some way or the other, are going to be about inventory and service to keep close to Him. The step 4 through 9 is the steps to remove the things that block me from a conscious contact with God. So once I've established that through steps 4 through 9, that conscious contact, steps 10 and 11 are maintenance steps. That's how I keep close to Him. And step 12 is going to teach me how to perform His work well. So, and to perform His work well, work, what happened to Easy Does It? Well, it says, next we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things. And I would say, wait a minute. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves, and we must be thorough from the very start. And if we have been thorough, we've written down a lot. But. We admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. We pocket our pride and go to it withholding nothing. What happened to relax and take it easy? No, it says, now we need more action. Faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Are you serious? Made direct amends to such people wherever possible. And if it's someone you dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. Remember, you agreed at the beginning you'd go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. It may you may lose your reputation. It may lose your position, your reputation, or face in jail. Isn't there an easier, softer way? No, it says if you are painstaking about this phase of your development, you will be amazed before you're halfway through. Then it says, we vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the Spirit. Yay, am I finally here? And we're going to continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along, because what brought me here is what's going to keep me here. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, ask God at once to remove them. Discuss them with someone immediately. Make amends quickly if you've harmed anyone. And then resolutely turn your thoughts to someone you can help. And that is inventory and service, wrapped up in one paragraph. And we have ceased fighting with anything or anyone, even alcohol. Wow. Because when I do this, God does this. Wow. If we have carefully followed these directions, we've begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. To some extent, we've become God conscious. We've begun to develop this vital sixth sense. It becomes more intuitive as we go. But it says we must go further, and that means more action. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. It'd be easy to be vague about this matter. Yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. You know, it's wonderful. The big book is fixing to make some suggestions on how for you to do prayer and meditation. I go to all the meditation workshops when I go to conferences and things. I've never heard anybody teach meditation from the big book. They either bring in their Western religious meditations or their Eastern religion type meditations and share with us, you know, how they do that. Well, the big book tells, it says if you belong to some sort of particular religious denomination that practices a certain meditation, you're welcome to do that also. Do you know what also means? It means don't leave this out. We can make some definite and valuable suggestions. It's going to make two suggestions for prayer and meditation. The first one is going to be about how to keep close to Him. And the second one is going to be about performing His work well. Because remember, there is nothing else in our program that we were asked to do. And that means that all the rest of the steps somehow or the other must pertain to either inventory or service. So meditation 1, here it is, we're on page 86. There's 3 paragraphs on page 86. That is the whole 24-hour scope of how we are to live our day. And believe it or not, it begins in the evening. Isn't that a trip? Don't let that throw you. Your highest priority is your evening meditation. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. its inventory as a meditation. It has become the most cherished part of my day. It's improving my conscious contact with God. And it's how I keep close to Him and improve on keeping close to Him. Now the next meditation is on your awakening in the morning. Okay, here we go. Here's my second meditation. On awakening, we think about 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. I do that. I wake up and think, well, what day is it? What's on the list? And then it says, but before you begin, what does that mean? That means before you walk out the door and start the day. Before I begin, I have a little meditation I'm supposed to do. And it says, I ask God to direct my thinking. And it says, under these conditions, I can employ my mental faculties with assurance. Employ my mental... back there, step three, didn't it say I had a new employer? And didn't it say that he had a job for me to do? I guess my morning meditation is about bringing my thinking into his employ. And that means performing his work well. It's meditation on my primary purpose. It's renewing and strengthening my vision that what's my real purpose in life today. It says, every day is a day that I must carry the vision of God's will into all my activities. I must not lose that vision. And I renew it every morning. How can I best serve thee? Well, how do I best serve other alcoholics? Well, with the carrying the message. What message? The message that's in the book. Oh, well, hand me a book. I guess my morning meditation means open the big book and do some meditative reading. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. Did you know that book is only a little that God wants to share with you? How to put your experience and share your experience and intertwine it with the message that's in that book takes you and God spending time together. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you. There's more God wants to talk to you about out of that book. Meditative reading. You know, it's at the end of step 11, it says the next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12. Yeah, that's step 12 in action. My step 11 morning meditation is step 12 in preparation. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. Did you do your inventory last night? What people say, I do that inventory, I don't get much out of it. I go, no, what comes out of it is what happens in the morning when you do your morning meditation and God starts revealing more to you because you're connected. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. And so sometimes my morning meditation gets really rich. I remember I started getting little inspirations while I'm reading, like, whoa, man, I like that little insight. And I'd share that in meetings and people go, that's really good. Where'd you get that? Out of my morning meditation. And one day I thought, I better start writing some of this down. I'm going to forget all these little neat things. And I went and got, I write Braille. I went and got my Braille stuff and my little paper. And it seemed like when I sat down there, like ready to take notes, God noticed that. He says, you going to take notes? He looks for people who are taking notes. You want to see God show up in your morning meditation? Make sure you do your inventory at night, but get up in the morning, open your big book, and get a pen and paper and start doing meditative reading. You'll feel a little spark while you're reading. Stop and sit there and let the thought develop around it. It's rich. It's really rich. Keeping close to him and performing his work well. And having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and continue to practice these principles in all our affairs. So if I continue to practice my evening and my morning meditations, I will keep close to him and I will perform his work well. And he will manage my life and be my director. Then, when life doesn't seem to go right, and doesn't seem to treat me right, instead of deciding to exert myself more and go into panic mode, what I will do is I will pause and ask God for the right thought or actions. And I will receive that guidance because I've been listening to God in my evening and morning meditations. and we will become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works. It really does. So, easy does it regarding the drama of life. But do it. Evening and morning meditation. Carry this message to other alcoholics and practice these principles in all your affairs. For he is all powerful and will provide what you need if you will keep close to him and perform his work well. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you. And now we have Elizabeth.
Hello, my name is Elizabeth, and I'm an alcoholic. And you know, the most incredible thing about standing up here is looking out at y'all and knowing that, you know, can you imagine what this room would look like if we were still drinking? Yeah. And knowing and looking out here and seeing all these people who have useful, purposeful, loving lives. And it's all because of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's all because we did it. You know, we did what they told us to do. And for that, I am so grateful, because I see friends out here, friends I got sober with, friends that I have currently, and friends for the future that I haven't met yet. But, you know, when I was given this assignment, I looked at it and I was like, you know, this is probably the most appropriate topic for me that I could have had, because when I first got to AA, I had no intentions on staying sober. I was just coming to check y'all out for a while. And then, you know, when after, you know, thing after I understood what y'all were doing, then I'd go out, finish my drinking, and come back in. I had started out in Al-Anon. And I had come to AA as an Al-Anon in an open meeting, and I saw something here that I liked. But, you know, I was that girl who, growing up, I wanted to get credit for the work that I didn't do. You know, and I was that girl that was scared to do anything, because if I didn't do it perfectly, then what was the purpose of doing it, even though it was the first time I'd ever done something. I didn't realize that you had to work and you had to do certain things in order to get certain results. And I came into AA, like I said, just to check y'all out. And I was so blessed. I was so lucky. God put me exactly where he needed me to be, because he put me in a room full of people who worked this program and worked it on a daily basis. And, you know, I went to that meeting and they said, okay, you get a home group, you get a sponsor, you pray in the morning and ask God to thank you for your sobriety. I mean, to give you sobriety for that day, and at night you thank him for the sobriety you had. You know, you work the steps, you do everything that in the book is said to do. And these things were coming from people that I looked at. And, you know, I'd gone to church because I knew there was something wrong with me, and I knew there was something spiritually wrong with me. And I went to church, but, you know, the people there, they had, some of them had what I wanted, but there was no way I could tell them who I was. There was no way I could share with them the things that I had done, because I felt like they would judge me. Now, I don't know. I mean, I was actually judging them, because they may not have, but I felt like they would. And I went into this AA meeting in Raleigh, North Carolina, the Big Book group, and there were these three men on the front row, and you know, they looked like they had peace, and you could tell they were respected, and you could tell they were loved. And then they started sharing, and all the people in that room started sharing, and they told things that were, you know, that were worse than what I had. Some of them were worse than the things I had done, and I started getting just a little bit of hope that maybe I could find a solution here, and maybe these were people that wouldn't judge me. It still took a long time for me to open up, but I still was scared of being judged. But I started doing the things that y'all said, and I did them every day. And about 3 months into being dry, I met with a friend, and we were talking about old times. It was an old drinking buddy, and I made the decision that day that I was going to take a drink again. That it was time. You know, I had done my thing. My life had gotten better. And, you know, I could go out there and finish drinking now. And I made that decision, and I went and I sat on my couch. And for some reason, I don't know why. Well, I do know why. For some reason, I did not pick up a drink that day. You know, I had made the decision. I had full intent, and all day long, I kept saying, "This is the day I'm going to drink, and I'm going to go to the store and get my alcohol." And I never did. And the next day, I realized that my life had gotten better. And the thought of me taking the drink. And, you know, I wasn't fully committed to this program, but I was doing the things y'all told me to do. And I was not fully committed to not taking a drink, but I did the things y'all told me to do. And my life got better. And I had a little bit of peace, even though I lived in a very chaotic situation. My ex-husband was going in and out. And it was very chaotic home. I had a small child at home, so it was hard getting to meetings. But my life had gotten better, and I had a little bit of hope. And I realized that I wanted what y'all had, and I realized that I needed to commit to this, and I realized that there was hope at the end of the tunnel now. And so for the first time, I sincerely, because I'd been asking for God to remove the craving to drink, and I had been living with that craving 24/7. Up to that point. And for the first time, I got on my knees and truly, sincerely, with all my heart, asked God to remove the craving from me. And he did. You know, it may not have been immediately, but it wasn't too long after that he did. And, you know, I know that that's because I did the things that y'all told me to do. You know, the things that y'all told me to do are not difficult. They're hard. They're emotionally hard. But they're not difficult, and they're not stuff that I can't easily, that I can't do. And after that, the craving was over, and I started working this program a little hesitantly, but, you know, I started working it. But, you know, I was that really shy little girl that didn't feel like she was a part of and didn't know how to talk to people. And, you know, I would go to meetings, and I would be scared to death that you would talk to me, and I'd be scared to death that you wouldn't talk to me. And then, you know, and I didn't want to go home because my home was a very chaotic situation and I had peace when I was at a meeting. But I didn't want to go home, but I didn't want to stand there. And y'all kept saying, well, you know, get a job, do something, you know, go pick up coffee, go clean up the trash, pick up the chairs, wash the ashtrays. And so I started doing that as well. And, you know, what that did is it gave me a job and it gave me something to do. And I was able to, you know, I felt a little bit a part of. That was when I started feeling a little bit a part of. And, you know, I was doing work with other people that were also, you know, picking up, cleaning the ashtrays and putting up chairs. And we started having really small conversations. And I started being a more part of. And I would go to conventions and I would say, you know, I would want to hang out. I didn't want to have to work. You know, that would interrupt my fun. But y'all kept saying, well, you need to work the registration desk. You need to work the registration desk. And so I started working the registration desk. And then I started meeting people. And I started becoming even more a part of. And I started discovering that when I do work and I see y'all having a good time, that that's the best gift that I can ever have. And because of that, and because I was in a home group where there were a lot of people that do service work, you know, I started that journey into service work. And to me, that is one of the greatest gifts that I have ever been giving. This lazy person who didn't want to do any work but wanted all the credit for it now enjoys service, and it is the highlight of my life. And that was because y'all told me to do it. I just did it. I just did what you told me to do. And for that, I am so grateful. And, you know, my life is good. I have problems in my life. I think when I first got to AA, I thought, oh, okay, I'm going to get sober and I'm going to do the steps and everything's going to be great and I'll never have problems again and I'll live in this utopia. And you know, that's not what it's been. The life has been hard. And there's been hard things, but there's been some wonderful, beautiful things. And I now have a life that I feel like I have a little bit of purpose in this world. And I hopefully can do something to make somebody else's world just a little bit better. And I have that because of what y'all told me to do. And y'all walked the path, and you showed me the way. And you showed me the way by your example. You didn't just tell me to do it. I watched you doing it, and I saw who you were, and I saw that you had what I had. So you showed me the path to do it, and for that I will always be grateful. So thank you all so much for allowing me to be here today.
Thank you, Elizabeth. And now we will have Bobby.
They're my friends. My name is Bobby, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Bobby.
I'm in total awe. I'm in total awe of standing up here right now. It's where I've come from, and these people, it's truly amazing what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. It's truly amazing what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. I owe AA. AA owes me nothing. I owe AA. My friend Patty's sitting over here. And if you knew Patty, all I would have to say to you about my drinking was, I drank with Patty. That's all I'd have to tell you, okay? And I've been to a few places with Kevin and assorted things. My life was a train wreck. And I was the first car, boom. Easy does it, but do it is, it took a long time for me to get that. I've been arrested for everything from petty larceny to homicide. My last prison bid was 10 years. I came in, I owed 6 years on parole. I got sober in September 10th, 1986. And up until that point, my life was a complete wreck. And my father was a New York City policeman. The damage I had done to my family, it was brutal. I had two brothers, both of them live in Savannah. Michael kept smoking, so Michael's not here. And Jimmy still lives in Savannah. So when I came into AA, I thought, I'll just make a few meetings and meet a few women and, I'll be okay, My sponsor, Marty, and the man who got me into doing service is sitting in the front row. And I'll be forever grateful. This is an honor and a privilege. And Marty was my first sponsor, and the guy was, I had to get a sponsor. They told you to get a sponsor. So I told, I heard this guy Sharon, and I've been stabbed, shot at, a couple of joints I was in, a couple of mental institutions. But this guy was torpedoed twice in the Pacific. Not once, twice. I said, I want to get this guy to be my sponsor because I never had a 2,000-pound torpedo come at me. And I asked him to be my sponsor, and he was my sponsor until we held his hand and he took his last breath. Because that's what Alcoholics has taught me. He told me I was absenteeism when I started doing the steps. After I told a few drunkologues, I went up to Westchester in the high rollers and, had them laughing and rolling in the seats. And he told me, start getting in the step room. I started making coffee. I didn't smoke cigarettes. I used to clean those little ashtrays. I don't know how long people around. They used to have little, I used to call them bogus ashtrays. I said to Marty, well, let's get a few things squared away here. I said, I'll go down to Sears and get 1,000 little ashtrays for $50 and we'll throw the other ones away. He said, no, you're going to clean them. And I started cleaning them. I said, I better start doing something that these people tell me because I wasn't sober. So I started doing that. I can humbly stand up here and tell you right now that I'm probably, if not, the best coffee maker in Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay? And the guys I sponsor, I showed them how to make coffee. I don't tell anybody what to do. I'm going to show you what to do. You come in the car, what we do, get in the car, shut up. You don't know nothing about it. Getting sober, we're going to show you how to get sober. And we go to meetings. I know everybody here. And that's what we do in the Bronx, home of the world champion Millennium Yankees, baby. I've been booed in better places than this, believe me. So my journey started, and I started making coffee. I cleaned up. My sponsors here, he cleaned up. They mopped floors. We started doing what we were told, We come out of the big house. We're all gangsters. I had to get humility. I had nothing. I had absolutely nothing. And I work on that on a daily basis. So, like I said, my sponsor told me I wasn't drinking. I was going to meetings, making coffee, all that, you know, what we do. This is what we do. And I had to get involved in the change of the program. I got a couple of tattoos, and the gentleman had mentioned it. They told me not to show it, but I won't do it. If you want to see it, I'll show you later. On my back, it says, turn it over. And little did I know, when I got that, believe me, I had to be ready for this, what was going to happen. My wife, who I loved more than anything on the face of the earth, got cancer and died 4 months later. And I didn't drink. And that's the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my friends who carried me. I was lost. I went to bereavement for 2 years to get over that one. So I wrote a fourth step. I had turned it over. And, you know, and things started coming a little bit. That I realized I didn't have to drink. I woke up one day earlier, and the compulsion was gone from me. And that was a miracle. Believe me. The first thought of drink, I drank. First thought of, I did it. I never had a second thought. The consequences came. Whatever happened, I had to just work my way and get out of it. So I wrote a fourth step, and I was honest and thorough. I told my sickest secret first, and I just went on a couple of pages, whatever it was. Resentments, forget about it. I like the thing I want to get to, me and Johnny, my twin. Where's my twin? There's my twin. That's my twin. What, we don't look alike? Come on. You think it was rough being there? You should have seen me trying to get the curlers out of my hair this morning. And it was my sickest secret. I was going to the grave, as they say, and I was like almost free. You know, I did a lot of damage. My father was a New York City policeman. And there was a lot more to that. When I got sober, my sponsor told me in the fifth step that I was absenteeism. I equated that with school. You know, you take, play hooky and stuff like that. And he looked me. He was a little Jewish guy, torpedoed twice in the Pacific, so I had ultimate respect for him. And he looked me right in the face and he told me, you would F for no one. You were a piece of junk. And he was right. He was 100% right. I had to suck that up. And I did, because I didn't want to drink. And he told me I'd never have to live like that again. That the change had to come in 6 and 7, you know. And believe me, when I dropped out of Harvard, everything was hard, you know. So I said, what is 6 and 7? And he kept everything simple for me. The guy was a legend. I know people hate that. But the guy was. He was tremendous. He had a crew of guys that was as sick as I was. And that's scary. And this guy was a legitimate guy, worked all his life, had a family, Navy, you know. I was telling someone earlier, you know what my Navy career was? 7 weeks. Okay? That's all. They asked me to leave, and I had no problem. I left. So he told me in 6 and 7, it was stop doing the things that are causing you pain, trouble, and misery, and start doing the things that are going to make you a better human being. Because remember what I told you were a piece of junk. He didn't say junk. And you don't have to be like that. Okay, and I work on that on a daily basis. You know, I talk about easy does it. I had no time for that, believe me when I tell you. Even today, I mean, we were on the go. I'm on the go. I do service, whatever. I'm not bragging. I'm just saying. I have to be an Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to be busy. I'm sponsoring a guy now. Just celebrated a year. He was 0-29. That's going to be today's number, if anybody wants to know. He came around 29 years, and he couldn't get it until he started making coffee, sweeping the floors like I do, and the people I hang around with, that's what we do. And he just celebrated a year, and we had what a wonderful time we had. The guy's a great guy, knock-around guy, and that's... Because I wouldn't let him sit down. No, you got to know. This is what we do, Joe. You want to get sober, 0-29, how about start doing it the A's way? Okay. And that's the results. So here comes the eighth step. Let me tell you something about the eighth step. It says about willingness. If it was left up to me, I would have sent everybody $50 and a singing telegram and told them we're even. It's a push. No pushes here. No, I'm not making bets. This is real life. And I wrote that. My wife was 1. My father was 1A. They were both there. My wife was a legitimate woman too. She never drank. She didn't do anything, you know, worked all life, whatever, and, you know. And I went and made amends to these people. My father was the first one I made. I wasn't on the step yet. He was brutal to me. I thought he was going to, oh, Bobby, I love you so much. Didn't work out. And I almost drank that day. I called my sponsor and he told me, what'd you do? And I told him, he says, please. And I met him and I told him, he said, you're not ready. He wasn't ready. When I did it the second time, it was well received. All my nine step was well received. And they're still my friends today. I have friends of 50 years that I grew up with that are still alive and, you know, and they're my friends. I made amends to them. I went down, I sought people out, and it was wonderful. So then 10, 11, and 12 is my sponsors told me, sponsors, Mike too, sponsored a lot of guys. And, well, speaking about sponsorship, you know, I had a hard time. The first five people I asked turned me down. And then someone said, you got to start asking men. I said, obviously, I was getting better physically. And I'm married. And the 10, 11, and 12 is a service. Service of any kind and every kind. You know, I take my inventory. You know, I used to tell my sponsor, I'd rather take his inventory than my mind, you know. You know, it's about taking mine. What did I do today like the gentleman they alluded to, you know? How was I effective for AA? How did I help another person? In AA or out of AA? It doesn't make any difference. I have a job. I'm a doorman in the Bronx. And I'm working there 29 years. I'm 29 years sober in September, day at a time. And they've never seen me do anything but help them. And they love me. I've been to weddings, funerals, divorces, bailouts, you know, with the families, and it's just, you help anybody, you know, because look what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. In the 11th step, I pray and meditate. I've been a little off the beam. After my wife died, I went to bereavement for 2 years, and a woman's daughter sitting in the back there, Annie, her mother, I got sober with her mom, and I started dating again, and I fell in love with this woman, and she might be dead today. She got cancer 7 years ago. She's sober 42 years, and it gets very painful. I'm going to lose her. It's not, you know, it's going to happen. I mean, Mike and Joan know her, and she's a wonderful, wonderful cancer, and it keeps coming back, and the woman's a miracle. I'm telling you right now, we've all seen miracles in our lives. I have. But this woman was diagnosed 7 years ago. They gave her 3 years. Our friend is a brain scientist. He called me personally to tell me 3 years, 7 years ago, a year ago, August 30th, I was there with the brain guy in the middle of the night, 4 weeks, 10 months ago. A month ago, 4 days, she's still alive. People call me, some people here too, from that got sober with her over 40 years ago. And I'm just praying for her. I can only be there, which I am. And they're limiting the time to go see her. So I haven't, you know, easy does it, but do it. I'm an active guy. I've been there for her because that's what my, I was there for my wife's last breath, my father's last breath, my sponsor's last breath. My a few other people, Gregory, our friend Gregory, that we, it's wonderful. I mean, it's sad that they're going to die. We're all going somewhere, you know. I'm not living, I'm getting old. I can't even walk anymore. You know, they all laugh at me. Wait till they're 71 with two spinal operations, brain cancer, I mean, cancer, whatever else I have, you know. But I don't drink and I go to meetings. See, that's the key. And the 12th step is service. Service of any kind and every kind. You just heard what Alcoholics Anonymous did for me. I would be a fool or very sick to turn my back on AA and to leave someone who needs help, whoever it might be. They might not be alcoholics. They might be who knows what they might be, to help another human being. And that's what I do today. Do I have another minute? 5 more minutes. Actually, I'm in. Amen. Someone told me the press is outside. They're waiting for me. Is that true? No, no, that's not true. There's only two things I really know about Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh, one other thing is too, like on my back, turn it over. I turn it over every day to the care of God. That's my third step, and I read stuff, and, you know, I do meditate. When I got on that plane Wednesday, and I sat down with everybody else, and I said my prayers, the one thing that I knew in my heart and my soul is I turned it over. Because I am not telling that pilot, oh, slow down, whoa, whoa, make a left, don't make a right. Nah. Here you can, you know, take it back. You know, I got a resentment. Or on the plane, I can't do that. So I know that was one thing. The other thing I know about Alcoholics Anonymous is this. Our friend who was a member of my group, was a professor at Fordham University in the Bronx. I don't know if you ever heard of it. Big university. Okay. And he went to the University of Indiana to give a lesson on alcoholism. And he had two jars. And he had a worm in his pocket. He had a jar of water. He put the worm in the water. It squiggled around. He took it out and he showed everybody in the audience the worm. He took the ethyl alcohol, put the worm in, disintegrated, never to be seen again. So he asked the audience, what was the message here? And the drunk porter in the back of the room stood up and he said, if you drink alcohol, you'll never have worms. That's one thing I know about alcoholism. The most important thing that I got to remember is if I don't pick up the first drink, I can't get drunk. And that's the bottom line. So I still got a minute, right? I want to thank you. I want to thank the committee and thank the other speakers. And let's have a great day. Thank you.